found this on Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's,
It's in the halls.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Guy Davis.
And...
Tanya there.
Yes. Do we have any news this week? Have you noticed anything news-related in Star Trek this week, guys?
Well, I guess something was happened in the Axanar lawsuit, where it was the judge had ruled that they could continue filming, which I found interesting.
Whoa.
Huh. I didn't even know they'd started filming. I know they were working on the sets last I heard.
Yeah, but they were holding off, I think, until they got kind of a rundown of what was going on. So,
and I saw
I thought they actually had filmed a bunch of it, was what I had in my mind, and that they were being, kind of come to a halt in the middle.
Well, they had filmed Prelude, and then they had filmed like a one scene on Vulcan. As like a, like, oh, look, we're working on it type thing. But not that I'm... That's the only thing I know they had filmed, like, for sure. Because, I mean, I remember in December, before the lawsuit hit, that they were working on the sets still. Like, they had videos of people, like, working on the sets put on their Facebook and whatnot.
Yeah, there was movement. But, yeah, I think they stalled out until they knew what the status of it. Obviously, it makes sense. If you're going to... You know, if they're going to rule against you and you're going to lose all of the money, why go through all of this to all of the machinations to build your sets and do all of the stuff you need to do? Yeah. So kind of understand it.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, the only thing, like, there's been like a, you know, there's like a contest to win, like, you know, seats to go to that fan event for Star Trek that's happening like later this month. I've been seeing that, you know, around Facebook, but,
I have no idea what that's about.
Yeah, I think it's like some kind of fan event and you can win tickets to it if you fill out this form. I haven't done it, but it looked kind of interesting, and that's where the next trailer is going to be unveiled, I think on May 20th. So,
isn't the movie coming out in July 22nd?
Yes.
One trailer so far?
No. We had a teaser.
Hasn't even been a trailer, huh?
So this is going to... And the funny thing is, I read that the final trailer is coming out at that fan event on the 20th, I think. And I'm like, this is not... What do you mean final? This is the first trailer, because the other one was a teaser in December.
All right. Well, and that maybe bodes well that they put it out, and then, you know, there was a lot of negative reaction to it. And maybe they went back and they reshot episodes and reshot scenes. And
well, pickups are pretty common in movies, though.
Yeah, but it seems like it was responsive. So I'm kind of, I don't know. I mean, who knows?
Maybe, but I mean, like, just because they didn't like the first one, that should have made them put out a new trailer even quicker. It's like, oh, look, no, we got all the good Star Trek-isms here. This will be good. You know, put, like, an actual, you know, score to it, not, you know, Rage Against the Machine or whatever. Not Rage Against the Machine. But whatever that band is that does the music for that trailer.
Yeah.
Not Rage. I can't think of it.
No, it's Beastie Boys.
Beastie Boys, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know that was a callback to the first movie where he's listening to Beastie Boys and, you know, driving his car off the cliff. And then in Into Darkness, he was listening to Beastie Boys while he was having a threesome with two cat ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now he's listening to Beastie Boys the entire movie because it's the trailer. No, don't do it.
Yeah.
Please don't do it. Maybe we'll get an actual, like, you know, orchestrated score or, like, you know, some of that pre-done, like, you know, orchestral music that's just made for trailers. Hopefully, we can hope. But this week...
Yeah.
Yes. But this week, we're going to do something a little bit different. Instead of doing a single episode, one of the last emails that we got, it's been a while, like last year, guys, like 2015, we got an email. We need some emails for 2016 so we can read on the air, so please send us some. But one of the last ones we did receive, they're asking us to go over some episodes that we did not like.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I like this plan.
So we're going to each do like a roundtable discussion. We're each going to give an episode that we didn't like, and then we're going to say why we didn't like it, and then we're going to hopefully discuss why or how in our infinite wisdom as, looking backward, how could this episode be made better so it wouldn't be as bad as it was when we originally saw it. Would you like to get started, Guy?
I could certainly do so. I have three of them, and I'm bringing them all up here so that I can talk about the director and make fun of the director. No, that's not what I'm doing. I'm just thinking it out loud. Okay, well, I'll start with the original series. So the one episode that I have had the worst time with the original series, is Way to Eden. That's the hippie one.
Is that the only hippie one?
No, but it's the hippie one. It was episode number 76.
The especially hippie one.
Right. We are right at the very end of third season, and that's a miserable time to be in Star Trek original series, because we knew that, so many people had left on the production team for third season. So we get some real stinkers in third season.
Like, and William Shatner was writing stuff, right?
Yeah, this one's the stinkeriest. The teleplay was by Arthur Heinemann, and it was directed by David Alexander. It was right at the very end. And essentially, the long and the short of it is they beam aboard hippies. They're chasing a ship called the Aurora, which has a bunch of thieves, or theoretically thieves, and they're not really thieves. They're heading to a specific planet called Eden.
Just because they're looking for more LDS, right?
They're looking for more LDS in the 60s. So yeah, but they're essentially hippies. That's what they are. And it's Dr. Severin and his followers are creating an intolerable situation on the Enterprise, says Kirk. I don't know.
People are too happy. This is a place of work. This right. is a ship.
Part of it is that, really, it is kind of funny to show that Kirk and Spock and McCoy are all very stodgy and whatever. But that said, it's still just horrible. And it's like, and I know that part of the goal for tonight is what could we do to make this episode better?
So, give us all LSD, like as like a prerequisite for watching it?
You kind of have to take LSD just to watch this episode. It's great if you're watching it with LSD. Easy, man.
High
on
acid.
This seriously is like the stinkeriest of the stinkeries of the ones in original series. And I'm a major original series nut. So, and actually, when you proposed this to me, I was like, which one do I really... Well, there really aren't that many in the original series because I'm extremely tolerant because I grew up on it. So since I grew up on it, I'm pretty tolerant of all of it. As I was telling my buddies, when I was sick, I had these 6-hour VHS tapes and I'd put them on super low speed and then just recorded episodes of Star Trek one after another after another.
Oh, yeah, that's what we did growing up. Yeah.
And then I just put one of those in, and they were random because the TV station here in Denver would randomize them. So, of course, it was just completely random in what order they were in. So I really loved all episodes of Star Trek because, it was what I did when I was sick and at home. I'd lay on the couch and bundle up and then, play the tapes all day long. And since Mom had to go to work, she'd be like, okay, you good? Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm just going to die. But it's all right.
I've got Star Trek with me.
I got Star Trek, so I'll die happy.
It'll witness my death for me.
Yep. At least Spock will witness my death. So, anyway. Yeah, that's the real stinker. What would make it better? Really, this one would have to be a ground-up rewrite. Because the point that they were headed for on this is that you head for Eden, and Eden really is a virtual hell. It's what it boils down to. Because they land on Eden, and Eden's poisonous, and they all die. And that's the end of the episode. And I, you know, that was powerful. But we're talking about a small sliver at the end. You know,
yeah. About it.
And that was all we got. And we get Spock playing the lute, or his Vulcan lyre, which is really cool.
But does Uhura sing over it like he did in Charlie X?
No, we get what's his name? The blonde guy. Who's the blonde guy? I'm trying to figure out who. Because they keep calling him Herbert. Herbert. Oh, man, it was horrible. I'm trying to find the list of people who are here. So part of this was also to highlight the IDIC, I think, was also involved in this. Because they were trying to do the We Are One thing. And
yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, because it turns out that it was all poisonous to... Ah, man. It was the blonde guy. There was a blonde guy, and he was the one, stepping into Eden, yeah, brother. I was like, oh, God, make me die.
Maybe they confused Eden with Haven.
Right.
It's like, we got to go to Haven. It's like, man, what's better than Haven? The Garden of Eden. Yeah, let's go to Eden. And they were so high, they forgot to go to the right place, and they went to the Hell Planet instead of Haven, which is a really nice planet.
Yeah.
With the best people that you call up whenever you get there, because she was super attractive, the lady that answered the phone all the time.
Yeah, so I guess really the highlight of this episode is that the hippies all die in the end.
Well, it all worked out. It made it worth it, right? You suffered through them, and then they died, right?
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, maybe I've been looking at this episode all wrong. Maybe the whole point is to make you detest the hippies so badly that by the end of the episode, you're happy that they all died.
They're all red shirts. They all died.
They're all red shirts. They're not wearing shirts, which is part of the problem.
Well, if the ladies weren't wearing shirts, it might have been easier to watch.
We did. It was, you know, we did have all of the various strange things on the dressing and stuff like that that happened every time with original series stuff, but that's all right. Oh, here we go. Here's the also starring. That's what I'm looking for. Charles Napier. That's who it was, who played Adam.
Adam, he's going to Eden. Oh, bad things happen in Eden if you know your Bible.
bad things happen when you let people write when all of the staff has left. Because like, I don't know.
It's like, hey, you, Grip, Grip, come here. I need you to write something down for me.
Right. So I've been reading Mark Cushman's These Are the Voyages, which is a fascinating, fascinating series. Because it's the behind the scenes of Star Trek, effectively, and he's gathered all this information about the original series, and each episode is in there, and it's fascinating because a lot of it is discussing, you know, the memos that are going back and forth between Dorothy Fontana and Gene Roddenberry, and you know, as they work and whittle these episodes down and get them into a point where they're actually really good. And a lot of the things that, you know, we all credit Star Trek for, they were working on that. So it's not like they accidentally came across all of their salient points. I mean, there was a lot of times where Dorothy would kick something back and say, I don't know what you're trying to say. There's no statement in this script. Bring it back when it has a statement.
Yeah.
And she was talking about, you know, she wants that Jonathan Swift, you know, sneaking a statement about our current situation into the script. And so in third season, we lost a lot of the producers. Actually, I hit Way to Eden on the main Wikipedia instead of Memory Alpha so that I can get all of these things up and running again, if you'll give me a moment.
Sure. Do you want Tanya to go with her first?
Yes, actually. Why don't we just say, Way to Eden would be better without hippies. but that pretty much wipes the entire episode out. So
it would be better
you just
without
have
hippies.
Spock playing the liar.
The entire episode.
And then a whole bunch of nobodies going out and not dying. So it's a strip cinemas episode. Okay, Tanya, you're next.
All right. Well, I guess I picked The Child from season 2, episode 1. It is a heavy Troy-based episode, which for some reason her heavy-based episodes seem to be my most disliked.
She moans a lot,
though. At first when you told me... What?
She moans a lot in her dedicated episodes.
Yeah, she does. She does, yeah. Interesting. I wouldn't have picked up on that until I said it.
she gets impregnated / raped by space sparklies.
Yeah, it's glitter.
Glitter, it's safe? I don't know. Like, I don't know. Is that? I don't know. Because the implication of this, that she's like moaning in bed and then she's pregnant the next day, she was violated.
Right. Yeah, and I looked this up and, I'm kind of looking up to see what all people kind of ranked as their least favorite ones. And this one did come up a lot. When I would read the comments, if this one was mentioned, people would then comment down below and say, oh, this is terrible. Nobody addresses the fact that she was raped. And, they go on and on about it. And that was a little silly.
But it was sparkle, so it's clean. It's not... It's not like violent. It's pretty.
Yeah. She wasn't too disturbed at it. I mean, she definitely looked a little depressed at that table when Picard announced to everyone that she was pregnant and Riker demanded to know who the father was right away.
Because he was like, "Is it mine? Is it mine? It's gotta be mine, right?"
Couldn't be Data's. <Dana's>. Mine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really weird, right away at that scene. Everyone's voice is kind of an echo, and she hears everyone, but she's also hearing the heartbeat of her child, and, Worf is back there saying that, this pregnancy has to be aborted, and, after hearing all those voices, Troy exclaims that she's going to have the baby no matter what, and they can do whatever they need to do to protect the ship, but she's keeping it. Just reminded me of some songs. What is it? Is it by Madonna?
Madonna.
I'm thinking it's. Yeah. I more likely remember the Osborne girl. She did it too. Kelly Osborne. She did that same song. That was playing in my head at that time.
I guess that was a more recent one.
Yeah, I haven't heard it.
I guess by recent, it was like 15 years ago, but yeah. I don't know how old the Madonna one is. That's probably 25 years ago, if not more. I don't know. So basically this episode, I guess, I have to be the one to run through all of this, don't I?
You don't have to do the full synopsis. It's just like,
So let's go to, basically she has this baby within like 36 hours. And as she's giving birth, she's saying, it's not painful at all. Everything's great. Baby comes out. Oh, I should say this is also where we get Pulaski, which I don't like. so that adds to the episode of not liking it either. Her mean comments to Data, and Data wants to be the fatherly figure at the birth, and she makes a rude comment about that. Data's super fascinated, and although he claims to not feel emotion, you can see on his face when he's super excited and all that. But anyway,
and he's hurt.
So this kid,
but not hurt.
He's hurt.
He's a robot.
Yeah. The kid grows up to age 8 within like a day or something, and she just takes him. She takes him into the classroom, and he's playing with puppies. And Troy comes to get him after a few hours or the day, however long kids are at school. And the boy stands up and the teacher says, oh my, I think he's grown in the time I've been here. She's not really, he's like 2 days old, and he's super large. So, expect something weird. But I don't know, for this being some kind of alien that got on the ship and impregnated Troy. You know, it's pretty much like, oh, well, okay, seems to be safe. Just go about your ways. Have your baby. Take it all over the ship. I don't know. I have that problem with it, that they weren't a little more concerned with that. and then, of course, the ship's in, like, grave danger of going with some kind of, I don't know, they have something in the shuttle bay that they're working on this whole time, and if something happens to that, of course, the whole will be in huge danger and everyone will die. Little back note to it.
Yay for B stories.
Yeah, the B plot is really weak on this one.
It's like, ship will explode if we don't abort the baby.
Well, they don't know it's the baby. You know, later it comes to Troy's tucking her son in, and all of a sudden, you know, he's like, Mom, I have to leave you now. And she's like, oh, what? By no. Leave you mean die? And then he instantly dies, and Geordi and Data come running in. They're like, oh, here's the energy we were looking for. It was the kid.
Oops.
He's dead now. And
everything's,
course, you know, everything's fixed now. He's dead.
Everything's fine, dead except for Troy is devastated that she's lost her 48-hour baby.
I'm noticing a running theme here, which is the episodes where, oh, they died, it's fixed, seems to be a running theme now.
All right, so what would make this episode better for you, Tanya? Like, how can we fix the child?
The episodes is the hard part. I obviously myself, you know, if you made me create an episode, it would probably be the worst thing that could ever happen because I would suck at it. So I really see how to fix it. It's just, gosh, and I'm not a mom either, so I can't be like, why was she so attached to this child? But it's just a little, I don't know. I think they should have been a little more concerned about how this baby happened right away and kind of looked into what was going on in the ship. And that random baby boy thing. Yeah, I don't know.
I want to say the child was one of the scripts they had written for, like, either
Phase 2,
yeah. That just didn't work out.
Yeah, I did hear that.
And actually, right. New Voyages, Phase 2, redid that episode.
Was it better?
Yeah, actually, I kind of feel like the way that Collie handled it was better. But it was still, yeah, that was one of the original. It was supposed to be Lieutenant Ilea that got impregnated.
That would have been weird.
Really would have.
That would have been more weird than Troy getting pregnant. Because, like, Ilea is so, like, I don't know, like, the weird backstory on the Deltons where they're supposed to, like, you know, swear celibacy because, you know, humans can't take it, you know, if they ever slept with one of them because they're so intense with, like, their sex moves and karate.
That is such a Roddenberry thing. That is so Roddenberry as to be, like, Roddenberry.
I mean, like, I think if they did Deltons, I think, you know, and they kept that backstory, they would have had to have, you know, the captain or someone, you know, get in a relationship with a Delton so that, you know, there could be that, like, you know, that tension or whatever. Oh, I'm disobeying Starfleet. No, I broke my oath to Starfleet and, you know, I've got this guilt complex now. Like, I mean, you could probably do some compelling stories with that.
And there's actually, like, further story arc on that. I mean, I've been reading some of the other apocryphal books, you know, the novelizations. And apparently it was Mayweather's parents that ran into the Deltons first.
Well, they actually mentioned that Enterprise the Orion episode where the three girls are stuck on the ship, you know, Trip and, no, not Trip, Mayweather and the weapons guy. Can't think of his name right now. Off the top of my head.
Lieutenant Reed, Malcolm Reed.
Yeah. They were doing, like, exercises cause they're, like, trying to get their mind off of, the beautiful woman. And they, you know, Mayweather does mention the Deltons, and that's the only other time I think Deltons are ever mentioned in Star Trek.
Yeah, I think. But anyway, yeah, so that was explored more in some of the novelizations of the Rise of the Federation, which are really good novels. I don't know. I mean, my feeling on The Child is that I think that there was a lot they were trying to say, and because they were being too direct about it, it ended up
being too beating on the head.
Right. Well, and not only that, they ended up like trying to get out of it, you know. So, oh, we don't want to be beating you on the head, so we're going to try to. Oh, but we ended up beating you on.
I think if they would have cut out that B storyline and been more subtle with everything in the A storyline,
it would have been better.
They could have like smoothed it out, but that B storyline just didn't work. I don't think for the episode. What do you think, Tanya?
Yeah, I guess they didn't really. I don't know. It was something to go back to. I didn't mind the B storyline, except for the fact that it wasn't really. It should have been much more of a high priority than it really was. I don't know.
Yeah, I just think that the A storyline could have been like, you know, more thoughtful, more thought provoking. Maybe if you know, they focused in on it more and didn't rush the child to like age 16 and like, you know, so quick, you know, take out some of the other stuff and just like focus on like the message that they're trying to say, you know, about, I guess, motherhood, like, I guess was the main sort of theme of this episode.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I got a lot of themes out of this one. I got the abortion theme.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
clearly one of the things they were headed for.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, you know, that's also part of potentially motherhood. You know, it's like, do I abort the baby? Do I keep the baby? You know, is it, you know, is it safe? You know, all this other stuff. But I mean, like general motherhood, you know, or potential motherhood.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
They did have, this was, of course, Dr. Crusher, you know, was gone, and Wesley was going to go meet her and leave the ship. So this is where I love Guinan, but Guinan was the one to kind of convince Wesley to stay. So I think that could be a way that this episode could have been better. Guinan not to be in this episode, as much as I love her, but then we would have had Wesley go back and meet his mom, and we wouldn't have had the have Wesley stick around for a few more
episodes. You don't like Wesley?
That's fine.
I don't know.
Wesley can go away.
And at the end, you know, they have to. Well, I don't know. How old is he here? Is he 16? How old is Wesley supposed to be?
This is one of those things. So,
Guy is just his age, right? Almost. Yeah, you're almost his age.
Is 2 days younger than me.
Oh, I remember. Yeah.
So when you watch Next Gen, I was sitting at the couch at the same age mm-hmm. as the Crusher going, what's this guy doing on the bridge? I could be on the bridge. Why not on the bridge? Since then, Bill, if you're listening, I love you, man. I have always loved you. You are an awesome dude. So, but yeah, that's a. Yeah, so he would have been about six. This is what season? This is the second season, right? So it'd have been 15.
Oh, he was 15. Okay, yeah. See, with that motherhood thing, you know, she kind of just left him there. But then he decides he wants to stay on the ship.
He's in good hands.
Well, yeah, and they start dishing up, you know, who's going to tuck him in? You know, Worf's going to take care of him. Riker's going to teach him this stuff. So,
Mother's Day was just a few days ago, and you posted on your Star Trek Iowa page, Tanya, about good mothers, and you're talking about Beverly. I'm like, Mrs. Troy, not Deanna Troy, Mrs. Troy, Luxana.
Luxana
Troy.
I love her. I do love her.
She's my favorite mom. No, I was saying that, you know, Wesley's kind of neglected by Beverly.
Kind of, yes and no, but she's still caring for him when she has to be. She does a better job than I would if Wesley was my son. There. See, that's my point. I think she's very caring and wonderful, and I could not handle him.
Well, so
gee, Ma, I made a tractor beam inside my quarters.
What's really horrible is that Wesley Crusher is the quintessential Mary Sue. I mean, he really is. I mean, do you know what the Mary Sue is?
No.
Okay, so the Mary Sue actually comes from Star Trek. And in the 70s, this fan fiction author wrote herself into all of this fan fiction. Kirk and Spock and McCoy all beam down to the planet. They get captured. Luckily, Ensign Mary Sue beams down and saves all of them.
Yeah.
She was like this super character, which I think actually they based some of the original concepts of Red Shirt Diaries on. I think that's sort of where the genesis of that came from. I'm not 100% sure. Next time we have them on, we should ask. Because she comes across as like a failed Mary Sue. So ever since...
The anti-Mary Sue.
Yeah, like she can't quite Mary Sue correctly. Ever since then, that has been sort of a statement about what you should not do in fan fiction. Because if you put Mary Sue in your fan fiction, you really are a troll. And so that's kind of one of those things. So the funny part was, years later, we finally roll up on Next Gen. We're getting more Star Trek. This is so exciting. And what does Gene Roddenberry do? He literally inserts a Mary Sue. He even names him his middle name because it's Gene Wesley Roddenberry.
Yep. Yep.
And so Wesley Crusher is literally a Mary Sue. I mean, straight up. It's just sad.
Yeah, it is really sad because, I mean, Data is like an android. He's superhuman in every way except for emotions. He's got like 7 scientists' brains in him. 7 grown men scientists, full body of knowledge. Plus that he's, you know, been to Starfleet and probably downloaded most of Starfleet's database into his own matrix because he can. And then Wesley figures out stuff before he does. Like, that just doesn't make any sense at all. He's 16. Data's got the, you know, combined experience of, like, you know, 7 fully grown scientists.
Right. 7 fully grown scientists in his head. It's really crowded.
Plus his own knowledge. You know, plus all of Lol's knowledge and all of Lol's experiences, too. Get downloaded into his head.
Oh man, The Offspring. That is not for this episode of.
No, not at all.
No,
we do not talk about The Offspring.
Offspring is a fantastic episode, and we're gonna be bringing Michelle Specht back to talk about that. We promised her to save that one for her when she is free.
Yes, I'm all on board with that one. Yeah. Okay, so David, we have
my turn.
We beat that one into the ground. What's yours?
So I'm going to go series order. I didn't start with Next Gen. I mean, with TOS. I started with Next Gen. My first pick is Shades of Grey. This is the last episode of season 2.
Totally flip episode.
Riker is bit by a root with teeth. And get sick and must fight through flashbacks to save the day.
In order to get better, you must go through found footage and survive.
I almost didn't survive. And early on in the show, I was like, I'd never want to watch this episode and talk about it for a show. But people asked us for least favorite episodes, and I bit the bullet and I watched Shades of Grey. Granted, it took me 2 days to get all the way through it. And like, there was days in between where I started watching it and then I finished watching it. So this is an awful, awful episode. And, like, the bottom line is they were trying to save money. And
not Riker. They were trying to save money. Not Riker.
No, they didn't care about Riker. He could have died for all the writers cared. like, everything is awful about this episode. It's not just the clips. Like, you can tell, like, they're trying to, like, waste time so they don't have to show another clip. And like, you know, edited another clip to fill up the time. Like, Pulaski walks into, like, the transporter room, and there's really awful jokes between you know, O'Brien and her, and they have these weird, odd pauses that just wouldn't be in a regular episode. And, like, you know, it starts off, there's no captain's log, no first officer's log, nothing. They're just kind of standing there in this jungle. And Riker's like, I got bit by a bug. Look at my leg. It's got a boo-boo on it.
Oh, it is. That is a particularly nasty one.
It's like a little red mark. I got a zit in my leg. I don't know what happened.
I'm probably okay. No, I'm not.
I'm just going to walk it off. And then, you know, they're like, oh, we can't beam it up because the biofilters can't filter this thing. And I'm like, that's the whole point of biofilters. So they invented something to, like, get past the biofilters. Nothing, like, almost, I don't think anything ever gets past the biofilters ever again in the rest of Star Trek. But this one thing, the biofilters can't stop it. So, yeah, everything about this episode is bad. Like, the acting's bad, the writing's bad. Like, there's... I mean, the only thing that sort of kind of gets good is, like, in the middle, when, like, they go through, like, three or four Riker scores back to back to back, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's kind of... I was starting to get into it, then it switches to something else, and I was like, oh.
Oh.
So, And then the episode ends with another awful joke. You know, he wakes up and he's like, oh, I was, you know, I'm ready to get back to work. I'm the captain of the USS Enterprise. And Picard comes in and he's with Data. And he's like, well, me and the Admiral were just discussing something. And Data's like, I don't think you have the authority to, you know, promote me to Admiral. And it's supposed to be a joke. And I'm waiting for this, you know, the 80s sitcom laughter to come in. And nothing happens, and that's the end of the episode. I'm like, what? It's just nothing worked about this episode. And how to fix this? This is really hard to figure out how to fix.
What's sad is you've given us this, how do you fix these things? And we're like, David, I'm not sure any of these games.
That was one of my confessions to the guy. I'm like, I don't know if these can be fixed, but I don't want to just be shitting, you know, talking down episodes, you know, the entire time. So let's get something positive out of this. Like, so the highlight for me was because we've got the Riker scores thing going on. We've got, okay, they actually had the scene that we use for the Riker scores, like, you know, intro where he's talking with Guinan. So that was kind of cool. And then, you know, we see him sleep with like three women back to back to back. And then it goes on to something else. So if we're going to leave the framework of the episode that Riker's sick, you know, you need to do a super cheap, super, super cheap, you know, episode. You know, don't want to build new sets. Like, okay, so we've got Riker. And what's going to focus on the Riker scores part? Or like, you know, the Riker captain fantasy. So like... You know, maybe start off with, you know, with Riker doing a captain's log, and he's like, you know, on the bridge of the Enterprise, and he's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, like, you know, he brings him into the bridge of the Enterprise and, you know, does things on the captain's chair. Like, you know, but still, like, keep it, you know, tasteful, you know. We're not making it a porno.
Already not tasteful.
No, but, like, you know, then you can, like, then you can sprinkle in the other Riker scores things throughout. And then, you know, go to an old, you know, old movies, some other movie set that's on the lot, you know, use that set, you know, where he meets different women and brings them back to the Enterprise and just kind of string them along. And then it ends and it's like, yeah, your fantasies destroyed this thing that was killing you. That's great. If we had to keep the format of the episode, I don't know how to save it, you know, otherwise than just not doing it, because they were trying to save money. And you know how they could have saved more money? By not doing this episode at all. So,
like I said, I'm not sure we can follow your mission statement on this
one. Yeah.
Because I mean, when you mentioned Shades of Grey, I almost put that on my list too.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, we all made our own list, so we kept it secret from each other. So we only watched our own episodes. So, that's kind of how I wanted it to roll, where we were like, oh, look, you know, we're keeping it secret, so it's all like round robin, and maybe we picked some of the same ones, maybe we didn't.
We didn't so far, I mean.
So far, we're only on round one, though.
It's true.
Oh, boy. So Shades of Grey, if it was a giant Riker scores episode, that would have been kind of cool. And that way you could have used some of the old, you know, the scenes, and it wouldn't have been as bad. Just create new scenes with that same type of thing. And then it's like, oh, look, your fan... You know, I know in Shades of Grey, his fantasies were making the virus stronger, and his negative bad feelings was making it weaker. But, you know, we could have just been, you know, horniness wins out of the day. You know, hurrah.
Being horny is great.
That's how Riker would have liked it.
What's the message of this episode?
What's the message of Shades of Grey as it was? I don't think there was one.
I don't think there was either. But Next Gen didn't have sort of... Next Gen didn't have Dorothy Fontana, is what it boils down to. Or Bob Jessman. Because it seems like Bob Jessman and Dorothy Fontana were the ones who were most likely to say, what are you trying to say in this episode? What are you trying to say?
I don't know.
So, yeah, I think that they were suffering majorly from lack of Dorothy Fontana. And
Shades of Grey, almost unsavable. It could have been, it would have still been pretty bad if it was a whole bunch of Riker scores, but at least you could look back and laugh at it and like, hey, that was kind of funny. But because none of the jokes that were in the current episode as it was worked.
Right. So, yeah, I could see that.
So you're up for number two, guy.
Number two for me. Okay, well, moving along in order, I'm gonna skip Next Gen completely and go to DS9, which is one of my most beloved, and I love that this is probably, next to TOS, this is my favorite season or series. So that said, If Wishes Were Horses from DS9 season one, the plot is effectively that Rumpelstiltskin shows up on the station and makes everybody see these fantasies, which freaks out Molly. Because she's the first to notice Rumpelstiltskin. You know, and everybody doesn't believe her because she's a little rodent, and nobody believes little rodents when they see, you know, Rumpelstiltskin.
You know, I would, you know, as awful as this episode is, I would consider this probably a guilty pleasure episode because of how obtuse it is and how it's like, you know, it appears to O'Brien the most. And, you know, of course, he's the Irish one.
That's true.
Have you gotten to this one yet, Tanya?
No, I haven't. I was actually going to start looking it up because that sounds really crazy.
Well, I
what episode is it?
I'll read the Wikipedia literally. Quark advises Constable Odo to lighten up, perhaps in a hollow suite. Odo dismisses imagination as inattention to real life. Quark offers to create for him a shapeshifter playmate, to which Odo retorts, "You're disgusting." Seeing the station commander's young son, Jake Sisko, approaching a hollow suite, Odo warns Quark he better not have created any playmates for him. Quark explains that Jake's program includes famous baseball players from Earth. Dr. Julian Bashir and Lieutenant Jadzia Dax eat lunch. I can just leave it there, because that's funny. No, wait. Julian wants a romantic relationship, but Jadzia politely refuses, pointing out that he has also eyed other women. Dax returns to Ops, from where... You know, this is another one of those things. She's getting on Julian for other... I mean, this is Dax!
This is Dax, the woman who, like, mates a guy on a planet they have to escape from in, like, 2 minutes and decides to stay with them, but then she can't phase out with them, so I guess she can't. But she's willing to give up her symbiote and all this stuff to stay with a guy she met for, like, 2 minutes.
The guy with the clear skull that was a joke for, like, 3 seasons... which she kept like getting involved with. And there was the Hawaiian guy from one of the ships. Anyway, okay.
Who liked to do fire dancing. Mm.
Yep. And whatever. Chief O'Brien reads to his daughter Molly the story Rumpelstiltskin and tucks her into bed. Shortly, she comes out of her room and claims Rumpelstiltskin is inside. O'Brien and his wife Keiko patiently return with her to find that Rumpelstiltskin is indeed in her room. Elsewhere, an alternate Jadzia attempts to seduce Bashir in his quarters, and Buck Bokai, a 21st century baseball player who in 2026 broke Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak, has followed Jake from the holodeck. The characters disappear when rejected or ignored. Unprecedented events, such as snow on the promenade, occur across the station, apparently instigated by people's imaginations. Quark finds himself escorted by beautiful, adoring women and hopes the situation will last forever. until he notices his customers are winning at Dabo. He desperately wishes them to lose, but to no effect. As Odo points out, Quark is outnumbered. Odo returns to his office and discovers he has wished Quark into a holding cell. That would be funny. Anyway, the wishing outbreak The wishing outbreak. Oh no, we have a zombie outbreak followed by a wishing outbreak. Anyway, the wishing outbreak continues until the emissions detected earlier from a void near the station. Wait, until the emissions form into a void near the station. It grows exponentially until Sisko realizes part of the wish effect and will continue growing so long as people believe it exists. He instructs his crew that it does not exist and to stand down from alert status. The crisis is averted. Later, Buck Bokai appears in Sisko's office where he explains that he's part of an extended mission of exploration that followed a ship through the wormhole. His people wanted to see what imagination is really about in order to learn about humanoids. The aliens did nothing themselves. They only observed the effects of humanoid imagination. Before leaving, he suggests that they may one day return.
I just love how Bashir and is like is just like getting like fondled by his imaginary duds the entire episode, which is pretty great.
There are scenes that aren't bad. It's not like the whole episode's a loss.
Shades of Grey is a loss.
Every time I watch DS9, I skip this episode. I just skip it.
Oh, I've got my next episode's one I typically skip too, and it's a DS9 episode.
Well, that was sort of my criteria, was which episodes are the ones that I jump past. You know, which are the ones that I just skip altogether.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, in this one, I don't know. I know what they were trying to do. I know that they were trying to do the aliens trying to experience a different kind of humanity.
Almost like the child, almost.
I guess maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the one that's like the hardest thing to make people... Have you noticed that there are threads through all of these? However, nobody dies at the end of this episode.
No.
Except like a whole bunch of imaginary people.
The imaginary Jadzia Dax, that's probably the saddest one.
Yeah. But the thing that gets me is, I mean, it's like at the very end, they should, I mean, this could only have been slightly worse if it was Tinkerbell at the end saying, clap for us to go away.
That would have made it unwatchable. Like, cause like as it is, it's kind of like a guilty pleasure because I like the Rumpelstiltskin, like messing with O'Brien. I love that. It's almost really, really racist.
None of them are really total. But, yeah.
It's not a great episode. This is like I said, it's a guilty pleasure. It's like, I know it's awful, but I kind of like it because it's like that, it's at that point where awful starts to become good.
Okay. Like, comes back around?
Yeah, it's like coming back around. It's like so bad, it's coming back around. Where Shades of Grey is like right in the middle where it's just awful.
It just sucks. There's no redemption.
There's no redemption for Shades of Grey. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't know how to make this one better either. But I didn't really watch it recently, so I can't. I can't really say much.
Yeah.
Lots of eye rolling.
This was directed by Robert Legato. It was written by William L. Crawford, and the teleplay was tinkered with by Michael Piller, which might have explained a great many things.
Michael Piller is a good art writer, though.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe I don't know. I think I have residual Trekkie over geek going on from back in the day with Michael Piller, and I might need to lay off.
Okay.
I've been saying that I think all Trekkies seem to go through this phase of whatever is today's Star Trek, I don't like.
Yeah.
And we all have to kind of go through this. And you have to remember that I have been through now all of them this way. Yeah. You know, we didn't like Next Gen because it wasn't like the original series.
Those curtains.
But then we started to like the Next Gen as it went along. And then we hated DS9 because, as we discussed in the last week's episode, it was messing with – it was just a clone of Babylon 5. And that made us mad. And then it was, you know, we didn't like Voyager because Voyager. And then we didn't like Enterprise because Enterprise. But now, with all of those things 10 years back, looking back over them, they're all really good. They just have some stinkers.
Yeah.
You know, now we don't like J.J. Abrams. You know, that's the thing now.
And then it starts January 2017. We will be hating on the new series. Not me personally.
No.
Not me personally. Oh, I hope not. I hope not me personally. But Star Trek fans as the greater... The greater Star Trek fans. And I know some of you guys, I mean, listening, you may be like, no, I'm going to like it, or no, I'm going to hate it. I'm like, you know, it's, you know, after it's over 10 years looking back, it's going to be the same thing. We're going to be like, yeah, it's got some really good episodes on it. And, you know, as much as we hate on some Star Trek stuff or say it's not very good, it's a terrible episode, Star Trek as a whole, any of the series are better than most of what's on today.
I actually have been recently, while drawing, I will just roll DS9 and Enterprise. Enterprise. I remember hating Enterprise. And now I started rolling from Broken Bow, and I've been going back through them again. They're not bad. They're not good. I mean, you know, the Zindi arc still sucks, but it's not as bad as I remembered it being in the early 2000s. And I think we're too hard on the franchise.
I loved Enterprise. I mean, like, I mean, my biggest problem is whenever they, you know, got off the main story arc, because, like, I love the Temporal Cold War. I was fascinated by that idea and the shadowy guy and the Suleiman. I thought that was really cool, really cool stuff they were doing. And then they'd go off on, like, side tangent episodes after doing a really good, you know, Temporal Cold War episode. And I'd be like, no, no, this isn't the Temporal Cold War. I don't care about this. This is irrelevant. Give me more Temporal Cold War. And like the
part of my problem too was the Temporal Cold War was unique, it was interesting, and it was good. I liked it.
And they never resolved it, which is like the worst. That by itself is the worst part of Enterprise. They never resolved that plot they brought up in the very first episode. I'm sure they could have if they got another season, but it wasn't a priority in season 4 for whatever reason. But even though it wasn't a priority in season 4 was still probably the best season of Enterprise, and it was very, very good.
Yeah, season 4 was what redeemed it for everybody, I think. I think we all liked season 4. So, I don't know. I mean, it's... It's kind of one of those things. It's like, I don't know. So anyway, if wishes were horses, back on target.
Almost fixless. Man, we're like failing at our mandate tonight. I'm sorry, guys. I came in with this at the best intentions. Tanya, what's your number two?
Well, I guess I didn't actually put these in order, but we'll say
it doesn't matter.
Oh gosh,
your order is as good as
we'll
any.
Say Night Terrors, because I watched this one that long ago. Since I'm watching them. Well, watching everything for the first time, I didn't rewatch this one. And because I ran out of time, but this, of course, is another Troy one. And it's not really her. It's just mostly the whole episode is about at least 20 minutes of it is her, you know, floating
in that
and
void.
Repeating, where are you?
Two moons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that episode is
in the dark.
I have to find you. Oh, yeah.
She's a really nice-looking woman, and that shot of her backside, it was, I don't know if it was the uniform or what, but it's not flattering at all.
No, that was pretty sad.
I feel really, really bad for Marina Sirtis in that episode.
Oh, I'm going to have to look at this, because I didn't think anything of it.
Look at her ass. It is odd. Like, it's the uniform just makes it look so weird, like the way she's floating. Maybe it's also the fact
that it looks bad. How could you think that her butt would look bad? That doesn't even make sense.
It doesn't, but it does. Like, it's the I don't know if it's like the harness she's in that's making it, like, you know, making her shaped funny, and she's got to wear the uniform over top of it. Like, it's just, she just, like, her it, like, most of the shots are from her backside, unless it's a straight on of her face. And, like, it just looks bad, and it's so, like, it's just, like, she's just, like, dangling out there, like, where are you? Where are you?
I have to find you. I'm with you on Night Terrors. I've got a good friend who used to work for Decipher, actually. He's my compatriot in super uber trekkiness, and that's his number one hated episode as well, is Night Terrors, so... However, it does have one awesome scene, and that's when all the corpses sit up and Dr. Crusher closes her eyes and says, go away. And I'm like, the power just exudes off of her. And I was like, okay, see now.
The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you.
I mean, I was at that point, I was like, see, this is why I love Crusher at this point in time. Because, I mean, she was just like, screw you people. Go away. And I'm like, I love that because, I mean, usually we were still, we're still in the 80s at this point in time, in the 90s, and women characters were expected to scream and run and help me and all this crap. And to have her be the one that said, I'm putting my foot down. And I was like, you know what? I love that because that was awesome.
So that's the episode where no one can sleep except for Troy. Right.
And Troy
can't wake up. Right.
Like, it's a terrible episode, but it's interesting with science that, like, lack of sleep, lack of REM will kill you. And I thought that was really interesting. I'm like, oh, your brain needs that. So, like, the science...
Kind of the other thing I didn't like... Well, I mean, it's not that I didn't like the episode, but whenever I watch Star Trek, it's late at night. Like, you know, it's like 10, 11 o'clock. And I'm one of those people who can't watch scary movies because... No matter how far out there it is, my brain says, oh my gosh, this could really happen. I'm doomed.
And they're right there.
So
right.
When I started, you know, watching this one and, you know, they weren't going through, what is it, the REM sleep? They can sleep, but they can't get full sleep or something, is it?
Yeah, right. They can't get rest. I mean, they're going to sleep, but they're not actually getting rest. And without rest, you'll die.
Right. And my back was hurting me for like 6 months, 9 months, and I was not able to sleep. Like I'd wake up every 30 minutes or an hour. So then I saw this and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go crazy. So I totally made it like this was going to happen to me now. So that also made me not like this episode. Is that
I
made myself think it was going to be real for myself.
Yeah, sucking yourself out can definitely have a negative impact on a thing. Like, I remember as a kid, the episode where they had the jellyfish get Spock, like, that episode freaked me out as a kid.
Operation Annihilate.
Where a piece of jelly could just freaking kill you. And I didn't like Jell-O at all as a kid. Even before I saw it, I never really liked the way it tasted. But, like, that just freaked me out, and I couldn't sleep. Like, little thing like that could kill you? That's ridiculous.
Are you talking about the big amoeba, or are you talking about the pizzas that were stuck on the underside of
the roof? Yeah.
Yeah, the roof. Yeah. So you're talking about Operation Annihilate.
Yeah, pizzas. Yeah.
The pizzas.
It got Spock.
Yeah.
Oh man, like that as a kid, that freaked me out. Like I didn't like that episode as a kid. Nope.
This is all full of nope. Nope moment, but nope. With some extra nope on the side. Nope.
So what do you think would have made this episode better, Tanya? Not having night terrors?
Tanya, I do not envy you because now this question's aimed at you and I cannot answer.
Oh, I couldn't even begin to think of what my... why did you have to say we now have to make these episodes better? It's just not even possible for me.
We've been failing tonight so far, so if you're going to mark this episode...
So why don't you join us in failing to save this episode?
I tried with Shades of Grey. I tried. I was like, make it a whole Riker Scores episode.
You did do good, yeah.
I tried. It may not have made the episode any better, but I tried.
just less...
less Troy's butt hanging from
I still can't find that image. I've been Googling that. I really want to see her butt. I want to see why you don't like her butt here. I can't find it. I guess it was just the repeating and the creepiness, which is what a lot of people probably like. But since I'm so scared of creepy things, I didn't like that. I don't know how to make it better. I'm sorry. And I still can't find her butt.
Frantically Google searching for Troy's butt.
Yeah,
I was about to say, if you start searching for Troy naked, you end up with really horrible pictures. I've noticed that.
I didn't do naked.
It's good. It's safer that way. Rule 34, man. Rule 34.
But then, you know, sometimes Rule 34, you got some really amazing artists who do really, really scary things.
Yeah, I mean, there's some good art out there that's really horrible when you process it, and that sort of makes me go, well, that's sad. Your art is beautiful, but oh my God, I'm going to have nightmares because of your art. Which, being an artist, I guess that's sort of the point, right? I mean, that's the point of art, is to make you think and feel and all that stuff. So, I don't know. Anyway.
So, my second pick.
Yeah, what's your number two pick?
Is Deep Space Nine, and it is Move Along Home, Season 1.
Move Along Home. That was almost one I was going to pick, too.
That's crazy that we were, like, on the same page. We were almost on the same page of these episodes. Move Along Home. Sisko's all, like, upset that Jake is learning about sex from Nog, and he's like, I've got a lot of damage control to do, but I've got to do first contact stuff the next day. So he does first contact stuff the next day with these new race called the Wadi, or Wadu, from the Gamma Quadrant. And he's like, this is, you know, and Bashir doesn't have his dress uniform. They have replicators!
Right.
Oh, I forgot to pack my dress uniform. I don't know where it could have possibly gone. Replicator! What's wrong with you people?
did you guys pack for Ryza? I mean, they have these little teeny things that they're carrying around because clearly they replicate their clothes. Right? I mean, they don't carry anything when they go anywhere.
I mean, like, what? I mean, you've got replicators. Just replicate a new one. You knew you had it the night before. You couldn't find your uniform the night before. Just replicate another one. Don't, like, look like a, you know, a jerk in front of your superior officer and your first contact aliens. Just replicate it. Even if you couldn't find it last minute, like, you know, replicate it. Throw it on. Be throwing it on as you're running up to the, you know, the thing. Anyway, first contact is not even, you know, it's Sisko's motivation for this episode. But it has nothing to do with the episode. The Wadi come out, and they're like, games? You've got games? And someone whispers in his ears, but his mouth doesn't even move. Is it Quarks? Show me Quarks! Oh, and then they, like, the thing is, I love games, and I'm sad Faith isn't with us tonight. She's a big gamer as well. Like, I love games, I love gaming, and I love Quark episodes. Quark is, like, my favorite character in Deep Space Nine. And Deep Space Nine, as I've said many times before on the show, is probably what my favorite series overall. But, like, this is everything going for it, and it just fails. It's got Quark in it, which I love, but it's terrible. It's got about gaming, which I love, which is... It didn't help the episode.
It didn't save it.
Okay, so the Wadi want to gamble, and Quark is upset because they are winning all the money. He gives them a free, you know, thing. And, like, sticks, and he does, like, I don't want sticks. And then they give him a priceless, you know, liquid, and he's like, ah, this is one man's priceless, this is another man's worthless. And then he's like, oh, all that we have else is these gems, these worthless gems. And Quark's like, precious gems, this is a work. And so they start winning at Dabo. They are very good at gambling and very good at playing the Dabo wheel. And Quark is just losing it, and Sisko's losing it too. He's like, and Sisko's there till like midnight. He's like, look, you know, I'm tired. If they want to like talk and stop playing childish games, they can find me in my quarters. And then, you know, the Dabo girl, his arm's all tired. He holds her arm up. He's like, she can't spin no more. And they're like, get a replacement. And so he brings in a Ferengi replacement. And Quark kind of gives him the look. He's like, you know what to do. So he cheats them at their game. And they start losing. And they realize that the guy is pressing a button. He's cheating. He realizes he's pressing a button. And then, with this, you know, they bring out their own game, and it's this weird, like, inverted triangle with, like, tracks on it, and it's kind of interesting looking, but they never really explain how the game works. And when the game starts, Sisko is wished away, along with, you know, Dax, Kira, and Bashir. In the morning, it turns out that Jake can't find his dad, because Jake was eagerly awaiting the sex talk. But never got it.
Because as a teenager, I was definitely eagerly awaiting a sex talk from my parents.
Dad, I really want to know what sex is. And you were going to tell me the difference.
Because I didn't learn about it in school or anything. And so what I really want is for us to sit around uncomfortably while you discuss parts of the body in weird analogies.
Yes, never being very straightforward, just using, like, you know, very cryptic text. Like hieroglyphics. Like, here,
along the line, this is the sex talk. Mention the fact that you and mom and you had sex at one point in time, and I'm going to be scarred for life. So,
and, this is, you know,
really what's going to happen.
He's like, oh, I don't know what's going to really be different. I mean, we've been watching videos or holos in the holo suite with Nog. I mean, I know all about that stuff.
Yeah, I'm good.
In the future, you don't even have to have the sex talk. It's like, here, this program, go check it out.
The holodeck appears.
Yeah.
Whatever your gender is, the opposite gender person shows up and says, now we're going to discuss part one, and starts stripping off their clothes. And then that's all you really need. I mean, there's nothing more you need at that point in time.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, it's kind of like Monty Python's Meaning of Life. They have the sex ed class, they have the bed that folds out of the wall, and like, foreplay. Have we done this chapter yet? Oh, very well. Let's keep on. Anyway, it turns out they're missing, and so because they are missing, Odo's trying to find out where they are, and it turns out that they've, like, narrowed their signals or something down to the game board, and they're in the game, and they have to follow these little girls skipping and saying, Alma Rain, 2-3, Alma Rain, oh my god, and it's so bad, like, they, like, you can tell the actors are hating life, like, you know the episode's bad when the actors are, like, just looking like they're despising life. When they're doing that skipping song, following the girl. I mean, Dax is the only one that kind of had, you know, any kind of composure in that.
That's because Terry Farrell, and I've met her in real life, Terry Farrell is just a happy-go-lucky individual. So I think she would have just been gleeful to just do it. Whatever it is, she's good with it. And because that's just the kind of person she is.
Nana Visitor and Avery Brooks are the most angry about it, I think.
Yeah, and
which watch their faces.
Nana is actually really also very happy-go-lucky in her real life thing, but she's playing Kira, who is not happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
So you can see that the actor in her is having a hard time, you know, being Nana and then not being Nana and being, you know,
yeah,
to being Kira.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's lots of little things like that. They go into a room with lots of gas, and there's drink, and they're scared it's poison, but the drink is, you know, fix this thing, and then there's a cave, because if it's Star Trek, there's always a cave. The Cave of Wonders! There's always a cave in Star Trek. Never fails.
Because they built that set, and by golly, they're going to get their money's worth out of it.
Every single time. And, like, and they made it seem like, oh, like, you know, that there's going to be great peril, and you double your rewards, and, you know, they're trying to appeal to his greed, and then, it, you know, he's scared that, you know, you're going to lose the players, and once he realizes that they're actual people on the station, he has a moral quandary. He's like, he starts groveling and crying, and it's like, I will never cheat her again. I will never do it. And he's, like, doing his fringy, like, you know, wrists together, hands open, like, pleading, begging them, and then, like, there's a move where he's got to lose one of them, and two of them move forward, but for some reason, like, it doesn't happen. Like, they all three lose, and I don't understand why that happened. I mean, they showed them what's happening inside the game, but, like, that shouldn't have any precedence over what the game rules are. Like, I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense. And, turns out, they were never in any danger at all, and so we can laugh it off. And, first contact is kind of like, yeah, they kind of never really do it. And they just kind of go back to the Delta Quadrant, and Quark's all like, I mean, the Gamma Quadrant, and Quark's all like, hey, let's, this game is cool. Maybe we could set up a place upstairs. And, you know, Sisko's like, Quark, you can't do that. You know, and it's like, and it's over. And it's such a depressing mess. Like, if they would have explained the rules of the game a little bit,
it might have been a little bit better.
Maybe, like I don't know. Like, maybe make Quark. I mean, because Quark has been like the sleazy kind of guy, and like, I mean, Ferengi's grovel, but like, that was almost too much for even for Ferengi's. Like,
It got embarrassing.
Yeah, it just like, and I love Armin Shimerman, and I feel like he was, I feel like his heart wasn't in it either, because Armin is the best, like, some of the best parts of Deep Space Nine, and I wasn't feeling him at all in this episode. Like, I don't know, like, it's just, the whole episode, I mean, and it was supposed to be, I guess, vague, so you think they're in danger, but they're really not. Like, I don't know, like, have you gotten to this one yet, Tanya?
No.
It's only two episodes after the one we talked about last time.
When it was me and you.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Okay.
You've got this to look forward to. But yeah, there was no real danger, and then, like, you know, like,
and this is only like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 before If Wishes Were Horses.
Yeah.
So I mean, we had two stinkers in a row
in the same season.
Which, although that said, the saddest part about If Wishes Were Horses and Move Along Home is that they are only three in front of Duet. Which is by far, hands down, best
episode of season one.
When you're like, oh, DS9's going to get serious. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Because I love Duet. Duet's one of my favorite episodes of all of DS9. It's a beautiful episode.
It's easily the best in the first probably two seasons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, before season three, easily, this is the one that just blows your mind. And you're like, holy cow, Duet's gorgeous. And so many people were turned off by If Wishes Were Horses, including me, because If Wishes Were Horses was the moment when I jumped ship on DS9 in its original run.
Yeah.
And just stayed with, and I didn't come back to it again until Trials and Tribulations.
What's that, season five?
Yep. I had abandoned at If Wishes Were Horses. Wow. So when I saw Duet later on, I was like, oh.
How was that season one?
Yeah, if Duet had come out before If Wishes Were Horses, I would not have jumped ship on DS9.
Yeah.
But because Duet came after Move Along Home and If Wishes Were Horses, it was just, oh man. Sorry, I didn't mean to steal your thunder on that one.
Oh no, not at all. I'm trying to think of ways to make this episode better.
Good luck.
I think Threshold. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. I think my last episode is the only one I've got some, you know, actual plausible ways to make help better.
You've got help for the last one. That's it.
Yeah, that's the only one I was able to like kind of figure out something for. This one is like, I don't know, like if they would have spent more time with the Quark Odo dynamic in a little bit more meaningful way. I think it would have been better, but Quark was so focused on the game and with the other guys, like it was the focus of the episode. So they couldn't. I mean, they should have broken the episode up a little bit more, other than just showing them what's happening inside the game, or explained that, you know, your players are what really determine the game's outcome. Because I mean, that's what it seems like. Since, you know, he had to lose one and two would go forward. But that's not what happened. He lost all three somehow because they all fell off the mountain because they helped the one. But he didn't know that. So, I don't know, it was so vague. It just, the rules just, I mean, you know what I'm trying to say? I mean, with the vagueness of the rules, it just made it hard to find compelling.
Right. I found the entire thing hard to find compelling.
I mean, even with defined rules, it probably still wouldn't have been very compelling. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. This is a wash. I'm sorry. This is just a bad episode. You know, skip
it. There's nothing we can do to fix it. We just need to accept it.
Put Garrick in it somewhere. Garrick would have, like, made it dark and twisted or something, you know. Because, I mean, when they wrote for Garrick, I think that made things a lot better.
Garrick wasn't in first season.
Yeah, he was.
Was he really?
Yeah.
This is me blocking the first season in my brain. It's just blocked. It's like nothing I can do.
Tanya, yeah, you've seen Garrick, right? The Cardassian who sat down with Julian Bashir? It was an early episode. I think it was before Keyless.
I think so. I think I can picture him.
Yeah, he sits down with him.
Sorry,
he's looking really intense at him. Oh, yeah, that's cool. I was just throwing up my arms and being like, I don't know how to fix. I have no idea how to fix Move Along Home. It's an episode I skip.
Yeah. Generally, I skip a lot of the first season of DS9 until we get to Duet.
Yeah.
And then Duet. And then I watch Duet again. And then I watch Duet again because that's just beautiful.
Yeah, it's really
oh, the guy. Okay, yeah. Yeah, the guy in the clothing shop. I'll call it a clothing shop.
Yeah.
I'm quite sure. He started.
Yeah, because the guy was like, he's not in season one. I'm like, yeah, he is. I'm pretty sure he's really early because I'm pretty sure Tanya would have seen him already. Yeah, Garrick. He is one of the best characters in Deep Space Nine. Whenever he shows up, it's usually gold. And I was, you know, as my last ditch effort to, like, you know, instead of throwing up my arms completely, I'm like, hey, if Garrick was in this episode somewhere, it would have made it better. Because when they write for Garrick, like, every episode that Garrick is in, he's written and is always written extremely well. Like, even if, you know, it's a bad episode, like in season one, if Garrick's in it, like, Garrick's part is really good usually. So, Garrick, is the light at the end of the tunnel. So if they would have squeezed him in somehow, this might have somehow made the episode better. How? I don't know. So, if you guys can think of anything or are listening, you can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. If you've got ways to make these episodes better, we want to hear them. Because if our imagination is lacking tonight, we want to hear what you guys have to say. Now that we've finished round two, Guy, what is your third and final?
So the third one is, I don't like this one for a specific reason. And that is, it's an overarching reason that happened a number of times. And this is the pinnacle, in my opinion, of this. The episode itself really isn't that bad, but it's Enterprise and it's Acquisition. And the episode is, in essence, the Enterprise is drifting, adrift in space. And we get on board the Enterprise and everybody is knocked out. And what we discover is that there are four Ferengi who have gassed the ship, knocked everybody out, and are stealing the ship. They're stealing pieces of, you know, stealing everything.
And the hot women.
They're ransacking the ship and the hot women. And the sad part about this is it has three Star Trek alum in it who are wonderful character actors. It's got Clint Howard and his Tranya, who's Ron Howard's younger brother. And he's brilliant in this. It's got Ethan Phillips, who's Neelix.
Yeah.
And actually, as much as people knock Neelix, I actually started to like him towards the end, and it wasn't bad. And I actually warmed up to Neelix just fine.
But Ethan Phillips is a fantastic actor. Like, I have no problem with Ethan Phillips. I've seen him in other things. He's a fantastic actor. I love him to death. I just cannot stand the character of Neelix.
And actually, I'm not bad with Neelix as time went on. It took me some time, but I think I'm in the Trekkie zone with that one. The I'm a Trekkie and I hate everything new zone. Which is obnoxious. Anyway, but it also has Jeffrey Combs,
who he's the best.
Returns so many times as Shran and as Wayoon. So many various characters. He was also Brunt FCA. And because, of course, he couldn't talk with all those teeth in his mouth. And he was Wayoon, who, you know, and so Jeffrey Combs is like major alum in Star Trek. But the reason I didn't like this episode, and this is episode 19 of season one, is purely from an overview stance. And that is, we couldn't visit the Tholians. We couldn't visit the Orions. We couldn't visit anybody. We had to go back to TNG's aliens. And this episode is an example of that. Enterprise could have visited all of the aliens that we had in the original series. Did we? No, we didn't. We instead went to the Ferengi, which were introduced in Next Gen, and should have just lived in Next Gen and DS9 and have been fine. You know, they were cool out there. There was nothing wrong with it.
Like, from a canon standpoint, I definitely kind of agree, like, why Ferengi? But I like this episode in general.
Well, and like I said, it's not a bad episode. The reason I don't like it and the reason it's on my list is because we could have gone anywhere with Enterprise. And this was the first rumble that I got that Berman and Braga could not get away from the universe that they built themselves and go to the bigger universe of Star Trek. This is where I realized, because, of course, we didn't get all of those TOS-era races until Manny Coto took over in Season 4.
I mean, like, I don't know what happened to the TOS races in general. I mean, we never saw an Orion ever in Next Generation. Never in Deep Space Nine. Never, well, couldn't in Voyager, unless they could have had an Orion crew member. But, like, you never saw any of these classic races. You never saw, like, Andorians either, or Tellarites. I mean, like, these are, like, staple races. Like, why? Like, why are the other series ignoring them? They're right. Great.
And you'll notice that during first season, we didn't get the Andorians or the Tellarites or any of those either. And we didn't start getting them until we brought Tran in later on in, like, what, third season? Second season?
Trans, I mean, it was a long ways. Tran's in the first season.
Is he really? Because, like, seriously?
Yep.
Because this is my problem. The first seasons of all of these things become fuzzy. Because they're all kind of bad.
Yeah, they go to this Klingon, not a Klingon temple, they go to a Vulcan temple and...
Right.
And, Pajem.
That's right, Pajem.
And then there's shadows of Pajem later where like
shadows of Pajem.
Yeah.
That's when we first meet him. So that was okay. Cool. But Pajem, I'm looking up Pajem now, which is why I'm a little distracted. Was the seventh episode. So that was before.
That's pretty early on.
That's still early enough that it doesn't seem horrible bad.
Yeah, but we didn't get Orions till like season 3, and I don't think we saw Tellarites till season 3 or 4. I want to say Tellarites were probably season 4.
Yeah, we didn't get Tellarites until season 4.
Because season 3 was the Zindi arc, and so they were in Zindi space the entire time.
Right. So anyway, my complaints with the episode are purely because it's like they could not get over it. You know, they couldn't get over their world that they built. They just could not. And that bothers me a whole lot. It really, really bugged me. And so I felt like at that point in time, it was like, for me, I was feeling like, well, why am I watching this if you guys aren't going to bother with the whole canon?
Yeah, because, I mean, in Next Gen, that was the first encounter they ever had with the Ferengi. The first, I mean, documented one where they actually saw them. Because, I mean, you know, because they referenced, you know, Picard, you know, having an incident with them, and that's how they brought them to Stargazer or whatever, but they never saw their faces.
Right. Well, and you know, and like I said, the episode itself really isn't that bad. I mean, it's not necessarily a good episode, but it's not a bad episode.
Yeah, it's a good run-of-the-mill episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a run-of-the-mill, and it's kind of a shame, because like I said, we've got Clint Howard and Jeffrey Combs and Ethan Phillips in it, which is great, but it really is kind of a ho-hum episode, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of sad that that's sort of where we went, you know?
So it would have been better if it wasn't Ferengi, basically. That's how they fixed this episode.
It could have been any race, and it would have been better.
It should have been the Orions.
Because then it would have even been a threat. Because had it been the Orions, they would be trying to steal people to take them and make them slaves. And instead of the Ferengis bumbling it around and screwing it up, it could have been a much more...
like, scary.
Episode.
You know, it could have been scary. I mean, like, you know, like actual, you know, threat. Well, you know, and you see Ferengis and you know they're going to, like, you know, screw it up.
Well, right.
Orions, it could have felt more like a more, you know, meaty threat. And Orions are pirates. I mean, this is right up the Orion's alley. You know, they could have made it this way from the beginning, you know?
Sure.
You could have easily switched them out and just made them less bumbly, and then it would have been, you know, a perfectly fine episode. And it could have set up for something bigger, you know, in the future. Because, you did the Ferengis once, but you can't do Ferengis again. There's no way.
Right. I mean, and a lot of this that is sort of an irritation with me is that Berman kept thinking that he was trying to appeal to the next gen Trekkies with Enterprise. And I think that's part of what really bugged me about the whole thing, is that it seemed like that was what he was always going for.
Yeah.
And this is an example of that. This one in the Borg episode. And the Borg episode...
Well, the Borg episode was brilliant.
Canonically, is okay.
It's brilliant.
Because it connects to First Contact.
Except for how could, you know, First Contact Borg be destroyed by, you know, pre-TOS, you know, weapons.
You know. But yeah, but short of that...
Other than that, it's brilliant and so well done.
Yeah, so I didn't want to pick on that one, although that would have been the same... that's the same complaint with that one.
Yeah, but it's a much more solid episode than this one, though.
Right.
Much more solid.
It's a much more reasonable episode, so...
All right.
So there we go. That was Acquisition. That's my number three on the list of episodes that irritate me.
All right, Tanya, what's your third and final?
I was just looking at a different one. I couldn't decide between two of them. There were two Wesley episodes. I guess I'll go with... Now, I'm going to go with this one, even though I know you guys... Well, I don't know if it's you, David, who love it. Maybe it's everyone. Has Ashley Judd in it, the game.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's nothing against the episode really itself. It's just annoying to me because... you know, everyone, what is it? Riker brings back a game from Risa, and it is very addicting, and everyone on the ship starts doing it, except Wesley, who, being a 16-year-old boy, you would suspect to...
Be the most likely the person most, to play.
Yeah, to play some kind of video game.
Especially since it makes you jizz in your pants every time you win.
Yeah, apparently. he does walk in on his mom using
lots
it.
Lots of heavy breathing and moaning in this episode by everyone.
That it was actually for him, not you know, I don't know if she was testing it out for him or what, but it's a little interesting.
Adult supervision. No, I want to play this out. I'm glad we didn't see Worf play it. I don't want to see his O face.
No.
With the teeth and the ridges, like. So glad we didn't see Worf play it. I wish we got to see Mott the Bolian play it. That would have been interesting.
Who?
Mott the Bolian.
Mott the barber.
The barber who has no hair.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, so this is, it's funny because the graphics, it was probably pretty high tech back then, I'm not sure, but it was really 3D-ish, kind of like a ball in a cup, but it really kind of reminded me of trombones for some reason. So when I see those, I immediately thought Riker really liked them because they looked like trombones.
It was like a vortex in a disc. Going into the vortex.
Yeah.
Well, it's because, you know, Riker being a trombone player, he's definitely a boner. Okay. Yeah. And that's it. I'm out of here.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun.
Okay.
So the game. And then,
so everyone on the ship starts playing it, and what is it? Do they just stop doing their duties, or I don't really remember what the exact problem is. Once again, I watched this once when I was watching them in sequence and didn't get a chance to rewatch it. But I just know, I don't know. The fact that Wesley, I guess whenever Wesley saves the day, that kind of makes me bummed.
when he
be the one to save the day.
When he marries Suzette. But didn't Data save the day because he woke up and he was able to get everyone?
But Wesley had to flash him the lights.
And they had to fix Data. Yeah. But did it somehow, the game somehow got into Data and put him out of commission somehow?
I think someone, I thought Riker knocked him out.
Beverly Crusher.
Oh, yeah.
Because Beverly Crusher knows where his butt switch is.
Yes, that's
the
true.
Butt switch which turns him off. Poor Data.
Hey, we don't question.
Data's always turned on, but he's almost never turned on. Oh, man.
So, yeah, I don't don't really know what would make this a better episode. And is this the only episode that Ashley Judd is in?
No, she was in another episode.
She does
We talked about it earlier.
We've talked about Leffler before.
She's just like a random like engineer inside engineering. Geordi gives her orders in an episode. What is the episode? We talked about it. We talked about it with you, Guy.
Yeah, we did. That's what I was saying. We've talked about Leffler before.
Wait, so was that before this episode?
Yeah, she was in...
Oh.
I know this. I'm trying, so that's why I'm like...
We all should know this. Oh, no. Don't know.
Oh, for crying out loud. I have Wikipedia open. Why?
I'm reading it, and it did say that... This was her first on-screen kiss was with Wesley.
Yeah, first on-screen kiss. That's one huge step for Will Wheaton, one small step for Ashley.
Right. She showed up in Darmok. That's right.
Darmok, yeah, that's right.
We don't. Oh, she's trying to.
Was so overwhelmed by the awesomeness of Terrell's or not Terrell, but of
Force
on. It's obviously late. I'm already looking at this stuff. Oh, well.
Yeah, so we record late, and our brains aren't functioning at 100%, so please forgive us. brain.
What is brain?
Oh. So, well, yes, Darmok. We did talk about it. It was a second episode with Guy, and we did bring up Ashley Judd. We brought up Ashley Judd the first episode with Guy, too, the Yosef Samberlin episode. Because we did mention this kiss with Ashley Judd and Wesley Crusher. Wesley
Crusher, yeah. So there you go. Anyway, yeah.
So you don't know how to make this episode better.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't make any episode better. I'm so sorry.
No, but... So, no, we can say making, you know, Wesley not the Mary Sue. Like, making Ashley Judd the Mary Sue would have been cool. For this episode.
Yeah, first duty to do. Wasn't bad. I mean, because he wasn't Mary Sue. Right? I mean, when we get to first duty, and what is that? The final mission? Or what is...
The final countdown. Oh, no.
Hang on quick.
I'm getting a message here. Hold on.
It's me. Oh, wait.
Getting a handwritten message.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so apparently if we take Wesley out and make Ashley Judd the hero, that will make it better. There we go.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, you know, remove him as the get him away from the Mary Sue.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Sorry.
That was when we went south. We went south. I don't ever think we ever go north, come to think of it. I think we just like, whew, we're gone.
We go to the lowest common denominator here on Synthaholics.
It's always good. I'm trying to... Okay, season 7. What is it called? Because it was a 7th season episode.
The one with the Indians?
No. That one was just weird. Although that wasn't bad. Maybe it's a 6th season episode. That's weird. Why would it be that way? Chain of Command is an interesting Wesley episode.
Chain of Command isn't even... That's not a Wesley episode.
Right. You're right.
That's a Picard, David Warner episode.
Yeah.
I'm like, was he even in that episode?
Yeah. I always get Shattered and Frame of Mind screwed up, which is really weird Schisms. That's it.
It's Schisms. Schisms is the abduction episode. Frame of Mind is the Riker going crazy episode.
Yeah, that's the one I always think it is, Riker going crazy, which actually isn't a bad episode.
That's a great episode. We talked about that one last year.
People are like, oh, I hate Schisms. And I'm like, I don't know. That wasn't a bad episode.
Schisms is an okay episode. It's more like it's a creepy episode. We did that for Halloween last year, and I loved how like it gives me like the shivers when they're building the torture chair in the holodeck.
So
did you find that episode?
No, I'm still looking for him here in. Well,
let me
there's
go.
There's the episode where with the cave, and you know, and Picard breaks his leg falling into the cave.
And... Oh, that's... shucks!
Yeah,
that's a really early one, isn't it?
No, that's
I thought so.
That's where Beverly falls in the hole and breaks her leg, and Picard's trying to fix it. That's a different one. That's
we've
not,
got a lot of people
one.
Falling into
and breaking legs. Yeah. Why don't I go with my third one while you're looking for that? So,
okay, go for your third.
You know, I already kind of let slip earlier, but my third is Threshold, Star Trek Voyager, season like one or two. It's really early. I think it's season two. Really early. So, first of all, they say Threshold like 36 times or 100 times in this episode. They say it so many times. I was like, come on. You can not do that, please. You're throwing it in my face. And then, basically, it's stupid early in the series. They figure out the Warp 10 equation, and they go to Warp 10, and Neelix, of all people, gives them an idea of how to keep the nacelles from getting ripped off the shuttle that they're doing the Warp 10 test on, which I don't even know how a shuttle can go even that, you know... I mean, I would assume the warp engine would be somewhat stunted since it's on such a small vessel. But no, it can go, you know, to warp 9 and, you know, normal and go just as fast as Voyager does. And then faster because it's got they get the warp 10 equation. And then the warp 10 equation makes you turn into a lizard. And
I'm sorry. It's the lizards. It's the lizards.
So the warp 10, like, so the side effect of going to warp 10 turns you into a lizard, and you go crazy, you lose your tongue, but you can still talk after you've lost your tongue.
That always happens with me.
Yeah, it's just, you just rip it out and you keep talking. It's like, this is awesome. You don't need the tongue to talk.
I will not be stopped, man.
No, nothing will stop me. So they decide that, you know, he's evolving into a more advanced creature. But this more advanced creature can barely move and is easily stunned and doesn't seem to be able to communicate or do anything of... The only thing it can do is reproduce really, really fast. That's the only thing this species can do. That, and I don't know how it's more advanced. They're not bipeds anymore. I don't know how a quadruped lizard that's semi-aquatic could be like more advanced than we are now as human beings. And... they have children, Tom Paris is the one who breaks the threshold, so I can keep saying threshold over and over again. He breaks the threshold, and he escapes after halfway through his lizard, you know, metamorphosis, kidnaps Janeway, and brings her on a warp, you know, 10 trip. So they both turn into lizards, and they have sex, and they have like four or five lizard babies.
It's the Janeway Paris sex that just hurts so bad.
It's, you know, unfortunately, they didn't show the lizard-on-lizard sex scene since it's animals. I don't know why it was, you know, forbidden from television. But, you know, it's on Discovery Channel all the time, so I don't know. But...
Because no matter what, you're going to just not be able to shake... Tom Paris and Janeway having sex aspect of it. It's going to hurt really bad.
They just skip it and then they have kids. And this is like 48 hours later. They have like four or five kids. And they don't take the kids with them. They just leave them on this alien world. That's breaking the Prime Directive in so many different ways. I don't even know where to begin. That they impregnated themselves and let this... offspring of their weird alien metamorphosis live. Like, I don't... It blows my mind that this is a thing. They could have brought the kids back and had, like, Naomi Wildman playmates. You know, three kids. Like, this episode fails in every single way. The science makes no sense. Like, why would acceleration turn you into a monster? Why... You know, and if there's a cure, like, they turns them from fully formed lizards... back to perfectly human in no time at all. So why don't they just use the warp 10 formula, get back to Earth, and then just fix everyone as soon as they get back? Or before they go, prepare everyone so they can be switched back, And, you know, just take it from there. So this episode fails on just about everything, like science, you know, good storytelling. I mean, the actors were trying. I mean, you know, Tom Paris, you know, Duncan, he did, you know, a respectable job at acting with the material he was given. I mean, Robert Picardo always has some really nice quips. I mean, Robert Picardo is almost never, you know, bad.
Yeah. But
there's just almost nothing to like about this episode. And this is the one I've got a couple different fixes for. So this is the one probably that I hate the most and that, you know, so I actually spent a lot of time thinking about how to fix it. I've got two ways you could fix this episode. Like, basically the one I just proposed where the doctor fixes the antidote for the lizard changing. They go home and they get home and they fix it. But then there's no show.
Which wouldn't have been a bad thing. You're saying this like that's a bad thing.
Well, no. I mean, like, the show could have gone somewhere different. They could have, like, you know, thrown them into the heart of the Dominion War. That could have been interesting. You know, did more crossover episodes of Deep Space Nine. There's so much stuff that Voyager could have done that would have been so much more compelling than what they did do.
Yeah.
Second of all, they could have, and, you know, I may have mentioned this before on a show, but the way I consider things canon is if Star Trek references itself. Since this episode is never, ever referenced again, I don't consider it canon.
Right.
But what they could have done is that, you know, keep this episode as it is, as awful as it is, and what they could have done to make up for it was to mention it later when they get 7 of 9, like around season 5, and then 7 of 9 being like, oh, you guys turned into lizards? Oh, well, you know, if you would have calibrated your shields with da-da-da-da-da-da, that would have prevented you from turning into lizards, and you could have gone home. And so they do it, and they go home. And then you've got the fallout, so you've got 2 seasons left of the show, and then you can deal with the fallout of having a turned Borg, you know, a hologram with a mobile emitter. You could have had so much great stories of the fallout of all the stuff that happened in the Delta Quadrant. That could have been so great, like Star Trek debriefing. There's so much good that they could have done, you know, had they gotten home early, instead of letting them get home at the very last second of the last episode of the show. It's such a huge missed opportunity. Or they could have not done this episode until they did meet 7, and so that she could have proposed it. So there's basically three ways to do it. Get them home early and make the show something completely different. Since they were able to fix them, have 7 of 9. You know, show them the correct way to do it later, so this episode can be canon. I mean, I know it technically is canon, but to me it's not, since it's never ever referenced again. But you bring 7 of 9 in, reference the episode, making it, you know, solid canon, and then having her have a Borg fix for it, because Borg use transwarp conduits all the time. And third of all, not do this episode until, you know, not even talk about, you know, the transwarp stuff until you've met 7, so you wouldn't have had the weird, you know, stuff happen in this season. So does any of that seem plausible to you, Guy?
It does. I mean, I think all of that was, I mean, obviously, I don't even know what they were thinking when they made this episode. I really don't. I mean, it is like, we've got to come up with a love affair for Janeway, but we can't really, I don't know.
Janeway needs to get laid, but it can't stick.
Yeah. It's like, she can't. I don't. Oh man!
They should have brought the kids back. I can't believe they would have left their offspring on the planet. Like, Janeway should have been, no. We got to go back. We got to pick them up and turn them back into humans, because this is not right. Like, it's just. I mean, unless she was just so ashamed of sleeping with Tom Paris.
We don't talk about that.
Like, I can't even do it. But nothing good came of this of that episode. And they could have referenced it. They could have done something with it later. They could have, you know, used 7 of 9 to fix it. You know, let's make it better. Let's take a terrible episode and let's make something good of it. But they never did.
I had to Google Captain Way lizard babies, because obviously I don't know what you're talking about, because I haven't seen a voyage. And this actually comes up as a voyage. Tom Paris. One of the pictures I came across was of it's a Voyager Tom Paris action figure complete with phaser to be lizard children.
The Lizard Children made it to toys. That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm not sure what to think about that.
Oh, they didn't have the adult Tom Paris lizard toy, complete with no tongue?
He doesn't mention tongue, I'm sorry.
That is a shame. Well, there you have it, guys. We talked about episodes that we really didn't like, and we tried and failed to fix most of them. I think Threshold has had the most possible outcomes of ways to fix it that weren't just like, oh, just change this one little thing. I mean, I feel like I did a little bit better job of explaining what could have made it better.
And I feel like you did a little bit better job of actually hitting the mission target than I did.
Ooh, I tried.
Was not going anywhere on that mission
target. Really good at that, yeah.
Well, yeah, but you showed me up by going over directors and writers and stuff like that, guy. So you were showing me up that way.
I love to show up people, apparently. Oh, by the way, it was the episode I was referring to as Final Mission, episode 9 of season 4. So if you're wondering,
that's the one where they're out in the desert and.
And they have to find a water source, but the thing has a shield around it and it kills the dude because. He was just some throwaway guy. Yeah.
Yep.
But that one. So first mission or first duty and final mission are actually two pretty decent Crusher episodes.
You said duty.
I phrasing.
Are we not doing phrasing anymore? Anyways, guys, that is our take on three terrible episodes. Sorry if we had some connection issues with the. Some of the things sounding kind of fuzzy. Hopefully you can look past that and look for the greatness of the content of this episode, even though we did fail on the mission of fixing the episodes. But like we said earlier, you can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com if you have ways of fixing it, and we can read them over the air if you have some fixes for these terrible episodes that, the only reason we're so hard on them is because we wish they were better. And I don't know how to make some of them better, unfortunately.
I don't think there's a way to make some of these guys better.
Well, if they're saving money, just don't do it.
You know what? I know you wanted an extra episode there, but really, really, a clip show in Star Trek's? Hello?
Really? And then they tried to do, the comic relief at the end. Just didn't work. No, come on. I was waiting for the laugh track, and it never came. And the laugh track might have made it funny, if they would have just thrown that in there. They might have been like, oh, they're trying to be funny. I get it now.
It's like MASH all of a sudden.
Yeah. MASH. Star Trek MASH.
MASH is good. We love MASH.
Well, all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can follow us on Twitter at SynthaholicDuo. You can follow me on Twitter at David_J_Duncan. You can follow Aaron at Blackbird2004, Faith at Faith Hertzberg, and what about you two?
You can find me at USS Tamerlan on Twitter at USS Tamerlan or at GS Davis Art. And you can also find those same things on Facebook.
And you can find me at TAWNYA, last name Holly, or go to my Facebook group, Star Trek Iowa.
And if you like the show, recommend it to your friends. Tell them about how much the show makes you laugh and, how great the material is that we bring you every single week. If you don't have any friends for some strange reason, you can go into iTunes and do the same thing by giving us stars, giving us some ratings, and just saying, saying some words and saying, what you like about the show so that this will help other people who are looking for things to listen to on iTunes. This will help us show up so that more people can find the show and listen to it and enjoy the same weekly content that you like. And if you like the show so much you're willing to give us money, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/synthaholics, where you'll get some bonus commentary episodes that we'll be doing in the near future. So come one, come all. There's different ways you can show your support for the show. We really appreciate any support. We appreciate you listening. Thank you so much, guys. Live long and prosper.
Good night.
and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
To Star Trek, I mean, Roddenberry effectively quit.
This is shaking. Like, here, like, there, smoke there.
What's going on?
That's not great. This is shielding with lubrication before and after the blades.
Lubrication before and after the blades.
I see. Hang on. Hang on. That's me.
Giggity.
Well, no, this is the infamous I have Wikipedia up. And this is the ad. So this isn't going
to... Game of Thrones season you know six what? Is here.
No, Game of Thrones!
I was reading off the Wikipedia article, and Memory Alpha, if you're listening, I just killed you, and there's a reason for it. This is why I hate it when they auto-run videos on websites. Because I was reading all of the information off of there. That's right. I apologize. That was me.
That's good. I can put this. I can cut this out and make it a blooper at the end.
It would be a fun blooper. Anyway,
you can hear advertisements. We're not getting paid for at the very end of this video.
Yeah. I'm totally for advertisements. On the other hand,
not getting paid for it's not great.
No, it's not. I'm gonna.
And there's a motorcycle outside right here.
Mm.
Holy cow!
I can hear it through my microphone. Could you guys hear that?
Yep. Yeah.
That was pretty clear as day. Pretty funny.
Yeah.
You'll have to edit that one out, too.
Go away! I don't want you no more, motorcycle.
No, you'll leave that one in. That's funny.
Tanya, since you've been looking so hard for Deanna Troi's butt, I grant you.
Yeah, well.
I grant you Deanna Troi's butt. Check out the link.
Oh, did you send it to me?
I sent it.
I don't know how. How do I look at this?
There's a little bubble.
And
if you've got...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So we've got a butt in the bubble. One. Is it a bubble butt?
No, it is... Yeah. I don't even know what to call this. This is like a really bad angle butt.
It is.
I don't know how to...
I don't think Marika liked that episode either. I think she hated that because she was stuck on that support for so long and everything like that. I think she hated it too. So you're
just
I'll check my phone.
It's just an unflattering look at her backside too. It's just I feel bad for her.
This is awful when a guy says that you feel bad for the way her butt looks. Like this is shocking to me. This is concerning. That's why I'm so determined to find her butt.
I sent you the link. It's right there.
I see no link. You sent it.
I sent it in the chat. Attached to our video chat.
I'll have to ask for assistance. I don't know how to do the chat. And I'm sure I'll hang up if I push the wrong button. How I work. So.
Should be a little word bubble, and it hides or shows the text.
That's all right. You know how this is going to be. David's going to add it to the cover art for this episode. You'll get to see it.
So this episode will have her butt up.
Everybody will see it.
It might be the middle picture.
It might be the center picture, right middle.
I usually try to do good pictures to the middle pictures, like, you know, the prettier looking ones, but this is a bad one. This is
a bad episode.
This is iconic.